Oh man, I get so excited on the Rec Poker Podcast when we start the show off by hitting all our audio cues correctly. We've got a full guest panel here assembled. I'm so excited for another Monday night on the Rec Poker Podcast. So first of all, thank you all for joining us here. My name is Jim Reed. I'm Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter and on Threads. I've got the best freaking job ever in the world because I get to hang out with my friends on Monday night and talk about poker. If you don't know what Rec Poker is all about, we're a group of seriously enthusiastic recreational poker players. We study together, we play together, we commiserate together, we celebrate together, we have a lot of fun, and most of what we do over at rec.poker is free. That's why we have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. We also have to thank all our premium members because their $15 a month helps us keep the lights on around here and keep doing the great stuff that we do week in and week out. And the Wrecking Crew is the group that I really have to tip my hat to because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be here. If you want to find out more about me and the rest of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew. But just listen up. You're going to meet a few of them here tonight, starting with producing co-host Chris Jones.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5v5 on Twitter or Threads or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game.
And I'm Joe Coolis. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Cool PhD, cool with a K, or as Elvita11 in the home game.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN everywhere.
I am Joseph Wills. I am Hockey_Poker on Twitter, now X, and Hockey_Poker702 in the home game.
I am Kim Kilroy. I am PetFat or PetFat33 on the social platforms. I'm Fergie56 in the home game, and I'm the captain of the PFFs.
Damn right, Kim, you sure are. We're going to be talking to Matt Stout from the Jerry series of poker and beyond in just a moment here. But I wanted to first introduce Joseph Wills, who you've just heard from, is the newest member of our Wrecking Crew. Joseph and was on episode 499 with his wife, Tony, talking about the Poker Oasis, their home game club down in Las Vegas. I'm so excited to be welcoming him to the crew here onto our leadership panel. He's going to be sharing a lot of fun stuff. Joseph, I want to say just thanks again for joining the team. You're a great fit here, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, reputation, you know, notwithstanding. But no, looking forward to it. I've already got an article coming out, you know, this week that should be posted, plus some other, you know, threads and stuff. Yeah, excited to help, you know, with the Rec Poker community and get some people excited about the game we love.
That's it. Everyone here on the Wrecking Crew, we were fun poker players, but what makes it, what we all have in common is we love sharing the love of the game, and Joseph fits right in there. If you want to find out more about Joseph, you can either listen to episode 499, or you can go to rec.poker/hockeypoker, and you'll find his Wrecking Crew page, and you can find out some more details there. All right, but on with the show. It's Monday night at 7:30 on YouTube. We're going to be giving away a prize later in the evening. But first, I want to welcome Matt Stout here to the show. Matt, you and I had a chance to meet in person in Las Vegas, which was a real treat. But thanks for taking a little extra time and coming here on the Rec Poker Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been involved in the poker world for quite a while. You've been a professional player. You've had a ton of success in tournaments and in cash games. Now you're very involved in the Cherry series of poker. And I know you've got some other irons in the fire in the poker world, but I don't want to put you in a box though. Why don't you put yourself in a box? I'd like to ask our guests at the first sort of define your own space in the poker world today. If our listeners aren't familiar with who you are.
I mean, I've been playing poker for a living since I came out of college, right around December, 2005, 2006 is when I really started having some big scores, made a big final table in a circuit event and chopped that with Matt Lance for 35,000, really kind of jump-started my bankroll in my career, started traveling on the tour. I played almost all tournaments for the first, 15 years of my masochistic career before I decided to start playing a lot more cash games, have transitioned to playing more PLO cash. I have kids now. I am spending half my time running the charity series of poker. I founded the charity series of poker as a grassroots volunteer side project in 2014, just doing three events a year. I was sponsored by Borgata and Hard Rock Hollywood as a pro player. So leverage those relationships to get them to give us free food and beverage and do some charity events for my favorite charities. They paired them with their Big World Poker Tour events. They showed me how to do silent auctions, how to market these things, how to do step and repeats, all the things that I had no clue about. I really just thought that I was going to be like, oh, it'll be easy. I'll just pick a charity and we'll do an event for them. And they were like, oh, that's cute. We'll handle this and show you how it's done. And I kind of ran with that because in 2017, after I'd been doing the events for a few years, Daniel Negreanu saw how successful our Hard Rock Hollywood event for Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital was. And he asked me to take over his big St. Jude event in Vegas. And that spiraled into me telling him to get the Golden Knights to sponsor his event because he knows the owner. He has 16 season tickets. He almost bought 1% of the team when they were setting it up. I was like, this is a shoe-in. Why haven't you done this yet? So it was my first question. I was like, yes, I'll run it. And why haven't you done this? Like literally same text while I'm still running the Hard Rock event. And he's like, oh, that's a good idea. I'll get back to you. 2 days later, he hits me up and he's like, oh, the Golden Knights want to sponsor the event, but they also want to run charity poker tournaments. So they don't know how, so they want to talk to you. So that's when I met with the Knights and I was like, okay, I'll do a fifth event a year as a volunteer. I spent about 100 hours per event. So it was already becoming a lot of commitment.
Yeah.
But then I got to this event with the Knights and within like 30 minutes, which by the way, I got nervous for this meeting. And that says a lot because I don't get nervous for WSOP World Poker Tour final tables, televised, like the full nine, life-changing money. Like I focus on the game for the game, and I somehow let myself get nervous for this meeting because it meant that much to me. Like I grew up playing hockey, and like my dream when I started CSOP was like, hey, if I could get the Rangers to let me run an event for them. And then I eventually move out here. They start a new team and that team comes to me asking me to run their event. So it was kind of a dream come true for me. And I've been splitting my time 50-50 between running events. Now we do events for St. Jude, Golden Knights, Raiders, Make-A-Wish, Three Square Food Bank, Habitat for Humanity, you name it, United Way of Southern Nevada, Las Vegas Rescue Mission. We're doing an event at least once a month on average now, and I have three in November. It's getting out of hand and kind of taken over my life, but I love it. I've just been trying to find a way to split my time between being the president and founder of the charity series of poker and still being a professional poker player when I have time. And now I'm also doing run it once training videos. So actually right when I get off this, I need to run some solves from the win tournament I won a week ago and start getting a training video going. So I'm wearing a lot of hats now, but it's all about kids and charity and balance now and being able to have a little bit of stability. I've been on a nice heater in tournaments, but I've been focusing a lot less on tournaments in general. It's just not conducive to my lifestyle anymore. I love playing tournaments when I can, and it's still what piques my competitive side and what gets me really going in poker, but cash games, and I've enjoyed PLO more, so it's made it easier for me to tolerate cash games, even though I always found them to be a more boring form of poker. Stability.
Well, I got a bunch of segues and takeoffs from that. I'll just remind. So, speaking about helping charities and good causes, I'll just remind our YouTube chatters. If you have a question for Matt, just type it right into the YouTube chat there, and we'll ask it. If you're on the panel here and you want to ask a question, just unmute, and I'll see that you're unmuted, and I'll call on you to ask Matt a question. And our YouTube chatters also, of course, we're going to be having our weekly food bank prize, where every week we give away a prize, we raffle something off to the folks here on YouTube, and it goes to support food banks across the world. So we'll get to that a little later on, but Matt, it's great to hear that you've got your heart in the right place for so many of these fantastic causes. I know you mentioned wearing a lot of hats and having a full balanced life. You didn't mention everything you're doing at home with the family as part of that, but I know, as you mentioned, you've got some kids now, and that kind of changes the calculus on what kind of available time you have. How old are the kids, and what kind, what are they getting up to these days?
Oh boy. So I have a 4-year-old son named Asher. He is mildly autistic, so he's in a full-time program called Applied Behavior Analysis, similar to school. He's working one-on-one with psychologists to help prepare him to hopefully be ready for gen ed and not being in special ed or self-contained as a result of his autism, because he is like an autistic genius type. So he has some regression, speech delay, and aggression issues from his like inability to communicate, but he also shows that he's like well ahead of his age in a lot of developmental areas. So he is the man. I just picked him up from school and was playing with him just now. I had to stop playing Call of Duty with him. He's 4 and I have him playing Call of Duty. He gets out of school and he's like, "Daddy, I want to play the shooting game." I'm like, "All right." It's a little questionable, but you see Daddy doing it all day, we might as well. So,
well, I think you've got some questionable role model characteristics already. But
I'm going for Father of the Year. I mean, he's playing a lot of different games, and it helps him, you know, cope and be happy. And it's not quite as bad, and there's certain benefits to screen time for autistic kids that are not there for kids that are not on the spectrum. So it's actually good that he's getting into games and he's like fixating on that, and he really enjoys it. So it's been a lot of fun. And then
that's great.
We have we kind of adopted my ex's 3 little sisters a little over 2 years ago to keep them out of foster care, and they are now 13, 17, and 19. So one of them is finishing up 8th grade, one of them is finishing up her senior year, and one of them just graduated last year. And
we're a famously easy to get along with age group, you know, those teenagers.
Like, they were like, "Oh, you're getting used to having a 2-year-old son. Here, take 3 teenage girls." Good effing luck. But it's worked out really well. These girls are amazing, and it's been a real blessing to have this opportunity to be a big positive impact in their lives when they kind of needed it the most.
Nice. Well, speaking of sort of growing up and evolving, you've talked about how you used to play tournaments all the time in your more masochistic phase, and that you've seen the light, and you're working your way into the cash realm, or at least it started doing that a long time ago. I'm with you 100%, brother. I just wish like some of these folks around here would get it. Like, come on, tournaments are fun and everything, but like cash is where it's at. Am I right?
I mean, I've been blessed to be, I mean, I work really hard at tournaments. So like, obviously there's that element to it. There is skill and hard work involved, but I've also been very lucky in that I've hit scores at just the right time where I'm like, I really need to, you know, be more stable, play more cash, do something else, and make more money other ways. And then all of a sudden I just have a big score in tournaments. I'm like, oh, I'm a genius again. My Gordon Veo, who took 2nd to Kuiwin, is a good friend of mine. He had a great quote one time, and this was literally 3 months removed from taking 2nd in the main event for 6 point whatever million, something like that. He said to me that this game never has you more than 2 weeks from feeling completely indestructible or like a total fucking idiot. There's very little in between. You're either just like where I am right now with my game, where I just feel like I'm unstoppable, or, you know, you're in that downswing where there's no way that you can play the hand correctly to win. And you're just, you become so fixated on minimizing losses that you don't give yourself a chance to win, and you fall into those negative pattern traps. So it's very true, and it was really nice to hear him say that so shortly after having such a big score.
Right. Yeah.
He's very self-aware.
Joseph, did you have something there?
Yeah, no, just on the opposite spectrum. I won't go into the amounts, but I know on the cash game there was a significant loss in PLO right before you started scoring in those tournaments. So I can see the love-hate with the cash game.
What was it, 3 dimes? I don't care about 3 dimes.
I believe it was, but I wasn't going to say it. But if you say it,
okay. No, I'm buying in. It depending on how the game is, how it's playing, how my role is going, how risk-averse I'm feeling, I usually either min buy or max buy in cash games with very little in between. So I play the 5/5/10 PLO at Aria because it's like the biggest daily public game that's running in Vegas, unfortunately. I wish they had like quarter-quarter running daily and it wasn't semi-private or private or whatever. We won't even get into that. But that game is either a 400 or a 2K buy-in for me. But even when I'm buying in like 2K at a time, like if I lose 3 or 6K in a day, that's kind of par for the course. I expect to lose up to 3 buy-ins before I'll call it quits. And it doesn't rattle me. I mean, I've been doing this for a living for 18 years now. I mean, you start to get to the point where you manage your bankroll properly, you manage your emotions, your expectations, you focus on what you can control, and you just sort of start removing the emotion from it completely. And that actually goes both ways. A lot of people think about just trying to remove the negative emotion associated with downswings, but it's actually important to not let yourself get on too much of an emotional high when you're winning either. And like, I'm not going crazy spending right now because I know the next downswing is lurking around the corner. I have 4 kids. I have some serious stuff to worry about with the 100 grand that I just won. So it's also just making sure that I don't get on too high of a high so that the absence of the serotonin from these wins isn't going to lead to depression later when I go on a downswing.
Great point. That's a great point.
So there's a lot to be said for realizing that you need to manage your emotions, your expectations, and the way you view the game, even on an upswing, because a lot of people just get on cloud nine and that's going to make it harder to deal with your downswing when you don't get to be on cloud nine anymore.
Yeah. I really like the way that you talk about it, because when you start thinking about it in terms of buy-ins and big blinds and not in terms of dollars that can get spent elsewhere, it's just realistic to expect every once in a while, you're going to lose a few buy-ins. Every once in a while, you're going to win a few buy-ins. Those are going to be the higher variant sessions that you play. And if you're bankrolled for the stakes that you're playing, you really shouldn't sweat it. It should just be the tools that you bring to the table, right? So I think that's the right way to think about it.
Yeah, and realistically, I mean, Joseph thinks I'm thinking about it as a negative 3K session, but in reality, I went in and put 3 hours of work in at my typical hourly rate. I know what my hourly rate is. I keep very good records. I know that I made hourly rate times 3 that day. You know, it just wasn't reflected in the variance of the day, and that's fine. But I know what my expectation is in that game over 800-900 hours plus of keeping very meticulous records. So I know what I made in the long run that day, and that's all that matters. I went and put in the work, and I made the best decisions I could, and we're going to live with the result.
Yeah,
I also run it once.
You also run it once, please. Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, that was the other thing is like, I was having this conversation with someone today who was talking about not wanting to play PLO instead of No Limit because it's so volatile. But I was like, as someone with a tournament background, I've gone on 3 or 4 lifetime downswings of a 250,000 plus. So, oh yeah. I mean, I was backed for a lot of it. I know how to like manage it. I have a lot of my own action for mid stakes, and then I'm backed for, you know, when I play 3500s and 5Ks and all that. So I know how to manage it and make sure that I'm not going to put myself in too tough of a spot, but it's still funny because people talk about variance in cash games and are like, oh, PLO and running it once. And I'm like, I have downswung a maximum of like 15 or 16K in that Aria 5/5/10 where I'm off right. And 2K at a time. That is 8 buy-ins, and even if we measure in the min buys, when I buy in 400 at a time, that would still be 40 buy-ins. Like, it's comically low variance, even running it once, even playing PLO. Like, when you compare cash to tournaments, there's absolutely no comparison in the variance.
Yep. Chris, you had something there?
I had a question about sort of the charity series a little bit too. I was kind of curious about, you know, charity tournaments have to be sort of have to function like a good solid poker tournament, but they have to sort of be appealing to people who maybe, are just coming to support the charity. They might not really know even how to play poker. And I'm wondering about what are some of the ways in which you think are the best ways that a charity game can be set up? Like, what are the best ways to make it sort of all inclusive?
Cool. I'll give you the two basic models that we use. One is our smaller typical events, and one is the big scale St. Jude type event that we just did at Resorts World. So our basic event, we have a 60 to 90 minute reception, which is silent auction and cocktail hour. We display all the silent auction items, give people the opportunity to buy 50-50 cash raffle tickets, bid on silent auction items, grab drinks at the bar, have past appetizers. And then we have the MC, you know, thanking the sponsors, talking up different things on the mic. Then we just get into a turbo tournament, 15-minute levels, 10K starting stack, traditional rebuy structure. So it's usually a $300 buy-in that includes your silent auction and cocktail hour ticket. And it includes your initial chip stack, and you can do one rebuy right away when you sit down to get another 10K and buy your stack up to 20. You can't rebuy it. You can only do two buy-ins at a time. So if you get felted, you can do a double rebuy. If you get back down below 10K, you can do a single rebuy. We do that for 2 hours and 8 levels. We play 10K starting stack, 100, 200, 300, 800, 1600 in the first 2 hours. And then during the first break, we give you a chance to add on. We'll do double chips, and it's $100 for 20K, 200 for 40K, 300 for 60K. And then we close registration. We do a prize. There's a trophy and a $500 Lake Las Vegas water sports gift certificate or a cash prize for whoever does the most number of rebuys, as well as the chip leader, so that we incentivize action at both ends of the spectrum and make sure that people are really going after during the rebuy period and setting the tone. And that's the most fun part, is just hearing everyone screaming rebuy, it's for charity, rebuy. Right. We had a table that for Three Square Food Bank 1 year, the whole table was all in blind the first hand. Nine people, great. $300 a piece, 2,700 in the middle, just immediately all in. Everyone's like pulling out their wallets. They're like, oh, it's for the food bank. Here, let's get the hundreds ready. So that's just a really fun, enjoyable vibe. It's not like normal poker tournaments. It's everyone kind of goes in expecting like hats and sunglasses and everyone being serious. And even like World Poker Tour champions and bracelet winners are like 7 drinks deep, like cash out on the table, just all in blind. It's hilarious. Chance is one of the best for that, and Anthony Zeno. They both show up to a ton of events. Joey Ingram's been coming out a lot too. The list goes on and on. The whole poker community has gotten behind it, and everyone who comes out to an event is just, I'm thanking them for coming, and they're like, oh my God, thank you for having me. When's the next one? Like, and it's really an honor to be the ringleader of this crazy circus where we all just have a blast for some of our favorite charities.
It's an easy cause to get behind. Everyone that's mentioned it to me tells me how much fun they've had there. There's no doubt about it.
Thanks. And then we come back from add-on break. We do the 50-50, the trophies, and then it plays out in the next 3 hours. We play down to a winner. They usually get $5,000 or a main event seat. There's a bunch of other donated prizes. We do bounties where we'll take a lot of the celebrities and poker pros, put one in the 5 seat at each of the first 10 tables, give them bounty medals, gift certificates. So whoever busts them just gets to take the medal off their neck, gets the bounty prize, and everyone gets to chat it up with different celebrities and poker pros that way. And then the other sort of model is more the Negreanu big event that I took over. And that one is, you know, dinner for 300 people at Red Rock, now Resorts World. There's, during the dinner program, they have patient speakers, they have videos from the hospital, they have a live auction with 6 figures worth of stuff. We had a painting that went for 46K. Wow. That one's like the whole affair. That's like a full gala plus a poker tournament. Mm-hmm. And those we usually just charge $500 for the ticket, so that it covers the dinner program, like prizes, your initial chip stack, same idea. That's a $500 with 100 rebuys, same structure. Always a main event seat for those, because those are six-figure events. Anytime we have events that are doing well into 6 figures in revenue, we usually bump it up from doing $5,000 for first to doing a main event seat for first. But it's a lot of fun. I mean,
and so
go on.
Yeah, just a, I mean, that sounds like a blast. And so when you have these sort of high profile, like, you know, hugely successful poker players in these fields, do you ever see them like switch gears where they start to take it seriously, or are they just always just kind of there? Is it like after the rebuy period, okay, now I'm into poker playing mode, or are they still, is it, well, how does that play out?
Most of them still are kind of clowning around the whole time. They'll start playing a little bit more seriously when there's like two tables left or final table, once they know that there's, you know, a pretty big prize in sight. But they're usually not there to win. They don't really care. They're there to dump $500, $1,000, and show up and be seen supporting the charity. And I mean, for them, like, it's the way I pitched it to all of them in the beginning is like, hey guys, I've made it as easy as possible while we're all traveling around to show up at Borgata, show up at Hard Rock, show up at Planet Hollywood during the World Series, and I'll align it with where we're going to be when we're free. And let's just go out and have these parties and have a good time. And everyone just bought into it. And it's like their easy way to give back. So they show up for all of them religiously. They hate it when they miss them. And I appreciate the hell out of each and every one of them.
Nice. Kim Kilroy, you had a question.
Knights players, Raiders. That's the other fun part for me. Is
right, of course. Real celebs. I was a season
ticket holder already. And now I just get to hang out with Ryan Reeves and Keegan Colasar and William Carrier. And now Derek England and I, that actually is a good segue because our upcoming event, October 13th at the Palms, is for Golden Knights Alumni Association. I've been hanging out with Derek England, unofficial captain, the original unofficial captain of the Golden Knights. They didn't technically have a captain, but it was definitely Derek after the impassioned speech he gave during their home opener about the October 1 shooting. And that was really emotional and very crazy, weird timing for us to start an NHL franchise. And he gave a really powerful speech about how, like, Vegas is his hometown and it means a lot to him. His kids were born here, and how the team was going to do everything that they could to help the team, help the town rebuild and heal. So it's been really an honor working with him. Showed up for my first meeting with the Alumni Association. Reminded me of my first meeting at Borgata when I got signed by them. Like, show up for an afternoon meeting and we just start ordering pints on pints on pints. And it's like, no one's even eating. I show up for lunch and they're just like, no, we're just drinking. We're all right. This is going to be fun. Let's go. This should be a good event.
Yeah, that's bringing a fun mindset.
I had to turn him down for a third pint. I was like, guys, I got to drive. Mine's an 8.2. Like, I'm good.
That's awesome. Kim?
I may or may not be asking for a friend. How do you choose the charities that you support?
If you have a charity that's effective and legitimate and has the following and the ability to get people out for events, get sponsorships together, I have the whole recipe. And we just charge a small flat consulting and management fee, and all the proceeds go to the charity. We don't take a percentage or anything. So it's definitely something we can discuss. It comes down to like vetting the charity, making sure that we can make the event a success, and then we'll run it.
Awesome. And are they all held in Vegas?
Nope. We've had events in Florida, New York, New Jersey, California, Nevada. I'm trying to think. I feel like there was one other state that I'm forgetting.
I see a lot of the events are in Vegas. Are there logistical challenges for you having these events in other areas? Like, is there a traveling team? How does that get handled?
So with California, it's easy because there's a company out there that I originally used to contract with them and have them do the operations, bring in dealers, chips, and tables for any events that I did where I wasn't having casino staff it, because they were vetted and approved by Nevada Gaming Control Board and casino, or whatever the California Bureau is called. I think it's the California Department of Justice is what handles gaming, charitable gaming, in the weirdest way in California.
That is weird. Okay.
They are very strange about it too. But either way, that company is out of California. They travel to Vegas. They have a great team. They're very professional. It's called the Poker People. And shout out to them. They were instrumental for a long time for us. And then as we came out of the pandemic, I had already been making plans with Glenn McCrory, the owner of Bar Poker Open and Guerrilla Gaming. He's become a pretty good friend of mine, is very supportive of CSOP. He came out to an event years ago and loved it. Told me anything he could do, he'd be all about it. So I really tested that. And I went to him and was like, hey, you want to give me 20 tables and 8,000 chips at cost? And we came up with a partnership agreement where I'm helping to promote Guerrilla Gaming. And I mean, they make amazing tables. So I don't represent products that I don't believe in. This guy is making the best tables in the industry. There's a reason that he's becoming the main provider for the World Series of Poker and why he does all the win tables. And he makes them really, really high quality, and he can make them lightweight so that they're portable. That was the key for us. Like, he's done all the Bar Poker Open stuff. He's been traveling around with tables and trying to figure out all the logistics behind that, just like we were going to need to do. So he's become an invaluable asset in vertically integrating, getting all the equipment we needed to vertically integrate, having our board of directors be able to pay for it all so that we pass the savings along to the charities. The charities pay us $200 per table to staff it, pay the tournament director, pay the dealers, instead of paying $35 to $65 per person, which is $300 to $600 per table.
Yep.
So that offsets our consulting and management fee almost completely in most cases. And then we also donate 10 or 15 grand worth of tournament prizes and silent auction items that my network just happily donates for every event. I mean, we have two glass seats, like literally first row on the blue line for the Golden Knights in each of our silent auctions, hotel stays at Aria, Brad Garrett meet and greet and comedy tickets, restaurant gift certificates, strip club bottle service packages. Like, there's, it just goes on and on there. And then every time one of the Golden Knights players shows up, we just get a ton of pucks, have them autograph all of them, keep them in storage, do one per event. So a whole bunch of autograph pucks, bunch of other fun stuff in the silent auction each time.
Nice.
So a lot of different ways that we've learned to help streamline it, make it as effective as possible, save the charity's money, make sure that we do that we have a really good time and make it a really good fun event for everyone, but without breaking the bank and while making sure that all the money actually goes where it should go. I mean, our events are usually 20 to 25K, the smaller events, the non-dinner program and all that. It's usually 20 or 25 grand in expenses, including 5K for the first place prize and 10 grand or 5 to 10 for that and 5 to 10 on the food and beverage and all the other incidentals and stuff that go along with running the event. But we've really streamlined it to where we're not wasting money on anything that doesn't need to be done. So Glenn at Guerrilla Gaming has been absolutely unbelievable and super helpful in this process. And we now have gaming clearance to run our own operations. We don't need a casino staff.
Amazing.
I had a weird miscommunication with Resorts World because their events team was handling this, because we have, like, you know, dinner for 300 is like a $50,000 food and beverage bill. So, right. I mean, that event, we did 750K in revenue, but obviously it has plenty of costs involved in it. That event, the whole, like, the catering team and the events team was handling it. So poker wasn't really that looped in, and St. Jude planned on having us run operations the whole time because Red Rock tried to charge us $65 per person, and we did it for $200 per table last year. So St. Jude was all about having us run ops. And we had a miscommunication, and Resorts World thought that we were balking at their price, and we weren't worried about the price that they wanted us to pay their dealers. We just wanted to have control over the operations and control over the pricing. So I actually had to go to Leon Wheeler, who runs the Resorts World Poker Room, with an olive branch and hire some of his dealers and offer to get them involved and like be like, look, this was not that we minded paying your dealers that price. It's like, we just were good at this. We run our own ops and we want to be able to save our charity's money. So I wanted him to realize that I wanted it to be a cooperative effort between us where we highlight their poker room. We're featuring their poker room. We can bring in some of their players from their big game there. They have an 80-160 mix game. And I mean, if any of those players want to come in, we're happy to have them. So I tried to make sure that he knew that it wasn't there shouldn't be any hard feelings. I don't want to work together for the benefit of the hospital with him on this. It shouldn't be something where he feels slighted or where we didn't want them involved, because we do want them involved. They run a great room, and we're pretty good at what we do and trying to make sure that we pass along all the money that we can to the charities. And he was loaned us tables. We hired some of his dealers. It was nice. He was very helpful in the end.
Well, and you know, the poker world, I'm learning more and more, is it's a small world and it's a world that wants to help. So, you know, there's a lot of friends for a good cause like that. And you want to sort of maintain that positive attitude with a lot of those people, of course.
Yeah, there's a lot of amazing people in this poker world. The other note was that in casinos, they have to have cameras on it, but we're also authorized to run events without camera coverage for as long as it's charitable gaming only.
Amazing.
So we do like full restaurant buyouts. We take over Sterling Club, a private members only club at like a really exclusive high rise condo complex in Vegas. And we have different venue deals built into. We got like ridiculous food and beverage minimums. We've haggled them over every little thing they tried to nickel and dime us on. We've bought all the AV equipment we need to not get banged out by Encore. I've learned all the tricks. They tried to charge me $1,600 for two wireless mics and a headphone jack to plug an iPad into to run our playlist. They're like, oh yeah, $1,600. I sent them a link to an Amazon thing with a 2,000-watt two-speaker setup, two wireless microphones and the full soundboard, and they were like, I was like, will this get the job done? He's like, yeah, and then you'll just have to pay us $150 to run electrical. I was like, done. So now we own the equipment for half the price that they wanted for a one night rental.
Yeah.
It just never ends. There's so many things. I thought I was just gonna, you know, easily run these events on the side for some of my favorite charities, and now it's become my job to find every little way to streamline everything, make it as effective as possible, and make them as fun as possible. Make sure that we have something for non-playing guests to do. If you don't play poker and you're there with a sponsor, we still want you to be involved in the silent auction, the 50-50. We run karaoke,
right?
Outdoor games sometimes, depending on what the beneficiary wants to do and how high or lowbrow they want it to be. We have a full sliding scale of events.
Yeah. You want to cover all your bases, you know? You want to have something for everybody. That makes a lot of sense. I like it. Yeah, Joseph,
sometimes I go up to a beneficiary and I'm like, all right, so what do you want me to tell the MC? Like, with zero being very buttoned up St. Jude and 10 being our awards dinner where we do whatever we want to do, what level should the MC be at? Right.
Yeah, you got to calibrate appropriately.
Yeah. It's like, Brian, do not. The funniest part, and this is the irony and why I'm so good at this, St. Jude wanted Brad Garrett. I was like, guys, you are the last beneficiary I have that can handle giving Brad Garrett the microphone. He is so un-PC and out of line. And when you hand him the microphone, there's no going back. He's going to run with it, and he's going to get – everyone's going to get a little tense. Everyone's going to be looking around the room like, is everyone else still on board with these jokes? Like, our first event, he ripped Coolio so hard that Coolio was like death staring Brad, and Brad goes – he just started like blocking his vision from Coolio, goes – Hey Matt, is he still looking at me? Like, he certainly gets quite out of line. So knowing how to pair these MCs and beneficiaries is always a good idea too. And they really pushed so hard for Brad Garrett, and I was like, guys, you can't handle him. I don't know how to put it. Like, you don't want that. I had Clayton Fletcher, my friend who's a stand-up comedian. You probably had him on the podcast at some point, or you should.
We have,
Stand-up comedian, owns West End Comedy in a club in New York City. He's made a lot of deep runs in the main event and stuff. He's become a pretty good friend of mine. We had him MC the St. Jude dinner one time, and he made one little baby Hitler joke. And
it's all it takes sometimes.
I've heard the end of it from St. Jude since. Yeah. I can't show up in Memphis without higher-ups coming up to me, mentioning in passing that one little... You know, it wasn't even like a full-grown Hitler. It was a baby Hitler joke.
Oh, so the joke wasn't baby. It was about an actual Hitler being a baby joke.
Yes, it was. He was still a baby at the time. You can't hate him too much yet. He's not horrible and evil yet. I thought that there was a little more leeway. I don't know. Like, St. Jude did not agree.
Apparently, Hitler remains a hot-button issue. We're learning new things every day here.
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon. It's never going to not be too soon on that. It's just not going to not be too soon. But Clayton didn't agree. But that's why Clayton's now opening for Jim Jeffries. So
yeah, I heard that. Yeah, hey,
that was awesome to watch. I got to see that in person. It was pretty unreal to see a good friend of mine open for one of my favorite comedians of all time.
That's definitely amazing.
Very proud of him and happy to see the direction his career is going.
Nice. Joseph?
Yeah, just going back to the charity and stuff, I guess more so for Kim's question. We just recently had our second event. I'm going to say we, because I'm a part of the admin staff as well. So I'm like a full
very much member
with my own email address too. Right. And
fancy.
we've had two for Sterling Club or for Curl Vegas, actually, Jim. And so they are now going to get their own facility. So hopefully next time you're out there, you can actually go curling, you know, if that's your thing, being Canadian and all.
Oh, yeah. We love all of the ice sports up here. We're big fans of all the ice sports. Definitely.
Right. So there's going to be a curling facility in Las Vegas. Just let that sit with you for a second.
I love it. I love everything about it.
Right.
So the Centude event that raised $750 is like a golf tournament, poker tournament, gala. It's all kinds of things. And then we're going to add a concert next year. And then the year after that, I want to add a celebrity hockey tournament. So we'll really get the Canadian contingent in then.
Yeah, that's right.
Joseph, were you done?
Just back to Chris's question about, you know, a lot of the high profile poker players, like a 30-second story. My first CSOP last March was in Vegas for 6 weeks, all bright-eyed, you know, bushy-tailed, whatever. Sitting down at CSOP and Dutch Boyd sitting on my right. Hmm. And, you know, deer in headlights look, you know, like, holy crap, I remember watching this guy in 03, 04, final table, whatever. And, I mean, he was the nicest guy, and all of them are. You said Joey Ingram, you know, Lincoln Kennedy, former, I'll say, Los Angeles Oakland Raider. He was never a Las Vegas Raider. And, you know, so all of them, yeah, it's a great event, even, you know, if you're learning how to play poker. It's, you know, still fun, and it's a fun environment to learn how to do so. You know, you can get a little crazy with all, like, you know, with all of the action and the rebuys and all of that, but it's a fun time.
I appreciate that.
And Joe Cool PhD. Joseph, do you have a follow up there?
Oh no, that was it.
Joe Cool, let's jump in.
So I just want to point out to the listenership that Matt is being very humble about his abilities in terms of this project. As most of you know, I do run my own foundation and have tried to put together events such as poker events and karaoke events and the like. And it is a crap ton of work to pull it together. And, you know, he kind of glossed over something that I think needs to be brought out, is that when you're doing charity work, everybody presumes that everybody starts cutting their costs and saying, oh, yeah, it's a charity, so we're going to make it easy for you, and we won't. They do not. And in fact, a lot of times I think they actually look for people doing charity events to charge a ton more because you're kind of stuck. You're kind of stuck. You know, I've gone to hotels and they have said, well, if you want alcohol, we get the money from the alcohol and you got to pay us in order to have the bartenders there. Mm. I don't quite have the leverage that charity series of poker. So sometimes I've had to give into that. But I do think that, you know, when I saw that you were coming on, I really wanted to say that you're really doing yeoman's work to raise that much money. And I don't know the finances, but those big organizations are not going to go to places that are going to cost them too much because they know what the deal is. So kudos to you, man, for the work that you do.
Thank you.
The question I do have, though, is one of the silent auction. This is a little bit in the weeds, and if it's not something you want to talk at length, you know, I can certainly take it offline. But it's like, how do you maximize the in-kind events or the in-kind donations from a variety of sources? Because that helps to maximize a lot of the income that you get at particularly silent auctions, or to draw in people who may not be interested in whatever it is that you have to entertain them.
No, that's a great question, and honestly, it's one of those things where it takes a lot of time to get the wheels rolling and get people to believe that what you're doing is, you know, legitimate, effective. There's people that are given a bad name to charity events. There's a lot of charity events where they're like, oh, the dirty little secret is like these charity events don't make money, and they're just everyone trying to spend some money to look good, and it's awful. I've worked really hard to try to make these events as effective as possible, and one of the easiest things to do, because a lot of, especially when you're working with a lot of different beneficiaries, and my role is to try to go and say, hey, I want you to support every organization that I agree to support, but I promise to vet them. And it's a little tougher to get them to give cash donations. But as you go along and build your network and tap into this person knows this person with this business, you can get $100 gift card from this guy's restaurant. You can do, you know, this guy will give a free product that doesn't cost him much. You just build this network of people that want to get involved. They want to help out, and you just kind of build a spreadsheet. We have multiple spreadsheets. There's a info sheet template that it has like several tabs. One of them is the prizes tab, where I have a giant section highlighted in green of all the stuff that's pre-committed for every event. That's all the stuff I was mentioning earlier. There's a section that's yellow that we have to confirm event by event or go try to pick up or see if we can get them involved. But it's just building that network, because there's a lot of businesses that are more than happy to have you showcase their product, list them as a silent auction sponsor. They give you like a $200 item as an in-kind donation, and that's so much easier for them to give cash every time that you're running an event. But someone else is going to come along and buy that product for $100, $150. They're going to get a discount off retail value. You generally expect to get like a little over half of your fair market value in a silent auction overall. I mean, certain items tend to do better. Restaurant gift certificates, sporting tickets. That's another thing to think about. A couple avenues to go in terms of I mean, you want to build a committee for your event so that you can tap into a lot of people's personal networks. You want to focus on companies that have very high fixed and low variable costs. So like restaurants have to pay a lot for every plate that goes out, so they're tougher to get big gift certificates from. But my friend owns Lake Las Vegas Water Sports. They have kayaks, paddle boards, fly boarding, all kinds of stuff like that, where he's going to have to pay a staff. He already owns all of his equipment. The variable cost of a $500 gift certificate going out costs him $50 maybe in upkeep and gasoline and stuff. It's so much easier to get those to on board to give you like a higher dollar amount. He literally made the mistake of telling me that I had an unlimited budget to give out their gift certificates. So we definitely do. We're practically handing them to you when you walk in the door for our events. It's like, hey, you won a bounty prize. Hey, you won the chip lead. Hey, you took seventh and you didn't win anything else, but here's part of your consolation prize, like a restaurant gift certificate, and go try flyboarding. So getting a lot of those items and just building your network it's a process. And I mean, honestly, that's one of the things Joseph can attest. I'm having him help out, because aside from my event by event spreadsheet, I have a separate spreadsheet called the master contact list, where I just have a giant list of companies that donated to other charity events or that I'm interested in and think would be a good fit. And we just haven't had the time to reach out to them. So when you have volunteers that want to put in hours, like even cold calling, it can be pretty productive when you have the right pitch, work on the pitch with them, give them the canned email, like highlighting the points like, hey, we've worked with all these beneficiaries and helped raise $4 million in the past 10 years. Like, we are legitimate, like, help us raise more, you know? So yeah. Just trying to really tap into everyone around you's networks and try to really maintain those relationships. Make sure those people come out from time to time and have a good time. Like, we have a guy who donates ATV tours for all of our events, and he doesn't have much time, travels a lot, but he comes out to at least one or two events a year. I mean, I want to make sure that I show that guy a good time and make sure that he sees us on the microphone showing our appreciation and things like that.
Joe, there was a question here about in-kind donations and sort of what that means and why that's a struggle. Can you talk to that a little?
Well, I think it's just broadly, it's just a donation from a company or corporation to the event where they don't charge you for it. And
yeah, any non-cash item.
Yeah. And so just in-kind is just the terminology they use. It can be hard to get them at times. And it's not so much a matter of that companies don't want to give stuff, right? You know, they want to be seen as charitable, but the problem is that there's just always a lot of hands out. And so like for years here on the East Coast, I would try to hit up the Patriots for things, and they had a certain amount, they gave it out. And if you didn't hit that window, then you didn't get anything for sure. And you had to get in the window a certain time, cause they had, I think a raffle, to be honest.
Calendar.
Yeah.
We would have our calendar marked for several points in the year. Yeah. It's like, oh, we got to hit the Raiders up at this time. We got to go Golden Knights up at this time. I mean, just knowing that calendar and trying to make sure that you establish those relationships is key. And also, and if you email me, I can send you. We have two separate decks. We have a cash deck and then an in-kind sponsorship deck. So at different levels, we'll. It's not as much as we give the cash sponsors in terms of seats and reception tickets and recognition, but. We show them like, hey, if you give us this amount item, you'll get your sponsorship logo in the silent auction area the night of the event. It'll be on signage or whatever it is. And as the levels go up, we do MC mentions and social media posts and things like that. So just showing them different levels of recognition at different levels of donation is another way to kind of strategize it.
Okay. I guess the one question I did, if I can follow up real quick, real briefly, it's just very small, is that so a lot of the things that you seem to be giving away seem to be more local, you know, and that there's some success to that. But we often are trying to have one event where we're dealing with a lot of people from across the country. How do you manage that aspect, given that I bet that a lot of people fly into Vegas for the events?
Good question, because I'm working on that, because we do get that complaint from people who are traveling in a lot of ours are heavily local, but the St. Jude event, now that they've made it this big destination event where they combine the fashion show with Anne Fontaine, the golf tournament, the gala, they have half the people that attend the event flying in for it. And then we have to deal with people not wanting the local experience thing. So I definitely need to work on some more national sponsorships, whether it's Chili's, Applebee's, whatever it is, where we can get something that it's probably in their neighborhood too, or gift cards to some kind of national company. It's definitely one of the things that I want to work on for multiple reasons. Not only the people that travel here and want non-Vegas centric prizes, but November 19th, I believe it is, we have an event for Folded Flag Foundation in Palm Beach, Florida, as part of the Bar Poker Open, my partnership with Glenn from Gorilla Gaming. So one of the challenges there is we don't really have a local committee tapping into the local businesses the way that we constantly do in Vegas. And I mean, the great part is a lot of them just come to me. They're like, oh, this event's great. I can donate this. I didn't even know this person was a business owner. And then we have another one that's just like, oh, we're on board. Every event you do, just put us on. And that's definitely a great thing to have. But working on the national thing will make it easier for me to go to different venues, different regions, and still have a nice selection of items that are still going to appeal to people.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I'll let everybody out of the weeds from these interesting things to me, but thanks for all the work that you do. It's great. I know the efforts that you put in, and you have my respect, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. Anytime you need some free consulting, hit me up. I'll send you our decks. I'll send you whatever you need, help you kind of copy our model.
Appreciate that.
We could try to partner if we can make it big enough, and we can make it worth us flying out and doing all that. And that was kind of the answer, is outside of this gets back to one thing that I talk so much that I forget the question by the time I'm done talking. I get sick of I get sick of listening to me too, so don't feel bad if you do. But we usually are partnering with casinos outside of here, but now that I may start doing more in Miami area and between Palm Beach, Hard Rock, Hollywood, and 11 Nightclub in Miami, is one of the owners is a friend of my vice president's, and I work out of a digital marketing and advertising agency now. So we have a web team, graphic design team, social media and email management team in house. And they do the marketing and everything for 11 Vodka. Their vodka brand for that club in Miami. So we might be doing some more stuff with them as well. And I think my goal is to have our next set of 20 tables be sitting in storage in Miami waiting for South Florida events. And then just as each region grows, we can do that. But in between then, like right now, St. Jude wants to do national expansion. We're working on doing a Hard Rock Hollywood. You're probably going to see a St. Jude Sherpo CSOP August, the night before their 5K main event. So if everything goes to plan, that will be a thing. I already went and introduced the guy who runs their Miami office to Bill Mason, who runs Hard Rock Poker, and everything looks good so far. So we're optimistic. Nice. And from there, we're going to start doing more St. Jude events in more markets. And we're just going to work on ones that have casinos for now so that I can have them run the operations as long as they're amenable partners. And Joe, one of the other things I wanted to touch on was the haggling with venues. I have an interesting leverage point because I didn't realize this at first until I was haggling with a venue once and thought of it on the fly. And I was like, just so you know, I get paid a flat fee. Like, how much you charge is not going to impact my bottom line whatsoever. I'm already working for way too little. I don't care. What I'm doing is trying to pitch you as a venue to my beneficiary. And the lower you make these costs, the more attractive you'll be and the more events I can book there and the more celebrities and big name poker pros I'm going to bring. And they know how much it helps to have the Sterling Club being posted about by Keegan Colasar and other Golden Knights players and having celebrities show up. And I mean, even the Palms, when we do events at the Palms, like this Golden Knights event, I already got an email from them like, hey, can you send the guest list? Because our executives want to know what celebrities are going to be there. Like, so they know that there's different benefits to them, even when they want to pretend there's not. And it's been a fun haggling thing for me, making them realize that I'm not fighting for me and I'm fighting for them and I'm on their team. And it was a whole paradigm shift and it got them to really cut the numbers for me. So
do you think I can count Jim and on. Do you think I can count Jim and Chris as celebrities if I invite them to my event?
The biggest of them all. I mean, yeah. No doubt.
We will find different ways. You can always find ways to add value. I mean, it goes back to how to win friends and influence people. You have to be remembering to look at it from their perspective and try to explain what's in it for them. Even with charity stuff. And that's what I learned. Like you think that, like you said, like people think that everyone's just going to be amenable to trying to help charity, but you run into a lot of roadblocks. You run into, I don't know if I want to get into it, but having one of the largest organizations in poker threaten to send you a cease and desist for the name of your organization, but you know, bluff catching that anyway. You run into foes that you wouldn't expect sometimes and things that you wouldn't expect to happen and spite from directions that it shouldn't come from. And even when you're not, like they're not trying to be as helpful as you would like them to be, but you can definitely, you can find the leverage points and you can find the ways that it benefits them and try to pitch it to them in a way where you're going to make sure that it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Listing them as a presenting sponsor, putting them on the step and repeat, posting, thanking them for sponsoring, even if it's just cutting their food and beverage minimum, not waiving a venue fee. Like we get, you know, really low food and beverage minimums and we're not getting banged down on too many venue fees or unionized labor costs. And like, I've worked very, very, my venues based on that. And they know that. And that's been my leverage point.
Nice. Well, I know we're coming up on an hour, Matt. I'm going to give folks one more chance to type any questions into the YouTube chat. They have any last questions and here on the panel, we got to get our man back here to COD with Asher. And I want to say I'm excited because, Matt, you and I have been talking offline a little bit and we're going to be offering some seats to some charity series of poker events coming up in the next little while. We don't need to get into any of the details now, but it's a cause that we are very excited to be supporting. There's going to be some rec poker prizes available to some of your participants and that sort of thing. I would just say sort of watch this space and see what kind of fun we can have. But if anyone wins a seat to a CSOP event, there's an understanding that the rebuys are mandatory. All right. There's going to be you're going to have an opportunity to donate some of your own hard earned cash to the event. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that comes. It's October 15th, I think you said, was the 13th. Next one coming up. 13th? Great.
Yep. And, Palms.
And we'll be putting some information about that in the show notes here. Joseph, was there anything you wanted to jump in with before we go?
No, just Friday the 13th. What could go wrong?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. A little spectacular. I love it.
Right. Thanks for the optimism. So that's what I need.
That's right.
Anytime, man. Love you, Matt.
Well, Mark Prashan is here in the YouTube chat. That's right. The Mark Prashan, website Mark himself. And he doesn't have a question so much as a comment. Play cash to take shots in tournaments. Yes, sir. Exactly. That's how I do it anyway. Go make a bunch of money all year playing cash and then go blow it all off bracelet hunting. And I also want to just say my own mother, Martha, for some reason is having trouble typing in the YouTube chat, but wants to let you know. So I'm getting text messages. A very interesting guest. Sorry that I couldn't chat. And then she says, love you. But I think that's for me. So maybe, you know, Well, we'll get her down to Vegas. Phil. Actually. It might be for Phil or it's you.
Seems like it's about me. I'm just saying.
Jim. We're really, I mean, it's all over the place. all right. Well, this has been really fun. Matt, if folks do want to get in touch with you to get more involved with what you're doing or to get to donate some prizes or to get, you know, to find out how to buy tickets to some of these events, what's your preferred way for people to reach out to you?
Email me, matt@charityseriesofpoker.org.
All right. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. If there's one thing that our listeners can do to support your cause, what would that be?
Show up and fire off rebuys. I mean, yeah. we really just need bodies in the seats supporting the cause. People that are high energy, have a lot of fun, want to play the game and enjoy it and support some good causes. I mean, we definitely need the people to show up. We can only plan the circus. We need the clowns to show up.
That wouldn't be the first time that our group in particular has been referred to as clowns. I kind of like that idea about it. So look forward to that. There is one more question in the YouTube chat. And Matt, we didn't get to talk any poker strategy at all here. We'll connect offline. Maybe we can have you back 1 week to talk on our forums edition and get into some of the poker strategy. I'd like to reach into your brain and extract some of that. But this question from K Poker Wannabe says, can you please tell me if the Leafs are winning the Stanley Cup this year?
I hope not. I really hope not. I would like to see a repeat champ or maybe the first cup for the Rangers since 94. I mean,
right.
I already got two teams. I'm really rooting against Toronto, but I love Ryan Reeves. He's actually, I mean, I'm not one of those people that like, you know, overstates my relationship with celebrities. We've become like more than acquaintances. We're not quite friends, but he is certainly a really good dude. He donates all the beer for our events. Vegas still loves him, even though he's not a Golden Knight anymore. And
right.
We love having mid events. He shows up, comes like high energy, having a good time, like partying with anyone who introduces himself to him. And then he busts out of the tournament and he just stands around like double fisting his 7-5 beer and like just continues partying, watching the final table, hanging out with people he doesn't know at the bar. Like he's the best. Really, really good dude. A lot of fun to be around. Definitely appreciate him donating all the beer we can possibly drink at the events.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one to hold on to. Well, thanks again, Matt. This has been a treat. I'll make sure that all your contact information is there for folks that want to connect. And I'm already looking forward to the next time we get to chat. Thanks again.
Yep. Thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
All right, man. Well, that was Matt Stout from the Charity Series of Poker. No surprise. That was a long, rambly, fun interview. I thought we'd get a chance to talk about some of his actual, I mean, the guy's won like millions of dollars playing poker. We didn't really get into any of that, but, a great cause to get behind, someone whose heart's in the right place in the poker world. And I'm looking forward to doing some more, work together to make the poker world a better place. The Charity Series of Poker and Rec Poker. What could be a better combination. So why don't we start, if folks want to start typing the words food bank into the chat, we'll be ready to do our raffle and see who's going to win a free month at Tournament Poker Edge, thanks to last week's guest, Derek Tenbush, which I'm really excited about. Chris and Joe, why don't you guys work out if it's going to be a nerd overlay or the Daiso Cam IRL You guys can figure that out while John Somsky is going over some home game results in the meantime here, and then we'll see who's going to win a prize today.
Well, we can start on September 18th, digging eight graves. Chris Simoneau.
Chris has been on a roll.
Yes, he has. Got his eighth nightly victory. Then Fu Walrus, who I don't know the real name for, got his or her first nightly victory. Gopher boy TJM
Taylor
got his first daily mixed victory for the year. Then Gopher boy TJM Taylor got his second international
victory for the year. Is he allowed officially to play on Saturdays?
Doesn't seem fair. Don't let we just keep going.
Yeah, all right.
Is there a speed round here? Just go.
Yeah, speed round. Time for the speed round.
This does bring him actually to 24. So he's wins lifetime. So he still has a ways to go to catch up to Evil Roy CA.
Very impressive, though. Nicely done, too.
Yes. Big Chiz 73, Scott Chisler got his first international victory. And then Bone Crusher 14, Marcel Dusik, got his first LPP victory. So he can contact info@rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker.
Way to go, John. And you nailed the Dusik pronunciation, is my understanding. So congratulations. We're all improving. He doesn't even like trip up over the ism at all anymore. Spike just keeps coming in and
old hand. I know it's like it doesn't even count.
It's like he's done this 500 times. It's like he's done this 500 times or something. It's hard to believe. All right. Well, I see four guesses in the YouTube chat here. Stu, Jim, Ron, and Dave. If you guys see those correctly, Chris, it looks like you have been selected for the DisoCam
week. Are we doing the four-sider then?
We're doing the four-sider. Let's see what comes up.
Here we go.
Okay, fingers crossed. Oh, and what do we got?
See it? This one's always hard to see. I need to get one that has lighting on it, but it's a two.
It's a two? All right, that means...
Jim, we ended up with two extras.
Five and six.
Oh, we did. We got a five and six in there. Okay, so listen, we're just going to give 2 months away. Every once in a while, you just got to give away two prizes. So the first winner is Gibber 222. That's our man, Jim Gibson, who just can't stop winning things. Apparently fantastic. Let's try that again with the six sider, and we're going to give another prize away this week.
All right. It's a three. Can you see
it's
that
It's a three. That's Ron. All right. So Gibber, Jim, and Ron, you are both instructed. Send an email to info@rec.poker and claim your prize. You've won a free month at Tournament Poker Edge. You're really going to love it. And we'll get that all off to you in no time. So let me see. Is there anything else that we should touch on right now? We do have some. I kind of teased this a little bit last week. In October, we're changing the premium membership schedule a little bit. We're sliding some events a little later on Thursdays. So if you West Coast fans will have a little more time to get home and relax before the premium events start. And we're also shuffling a couple other things around. But if you ever have any questions about what we're doing here at Rec Poker, or you want to get more involved, or you want some answers, just send that email to me, jim@rec.poker, and we'll get you all sorted out. But I really do encourage you folks, head on over to rec.poker/crew and see all the different friendly faces here on the Wrecking Crew. Everyone on that page wants to be a resource to you in some way, whether it's through coaching or just like pointing out resources for you to use or just talking poker. That's a group of well-intentioned folks that just want to make your poker life a better, brighter, more fun place. So I would encourage you to go and check that out. Any other comments, questions, concerns? I know Chris has to run out of here. If you're a premium member watching this live, you get to go start the deep dive, the monthly deep dive this month. So I will thank Chris, of course, for all the work that he does around here. John, Joe, Joseph, and Kim, we couldn't do it without you here on the Wrecking Crew. Of course, the support of the Running Aces Hotel Racetrack Casino. Check out their Hollow Scream event October 18th to 24th. And you, the listeners, we wouldn't do it without you either. So thank you. See you again next week. I hope everybody have a fantastic time.